Phil Henry Show at 1-800-449-8686. And the number one rated Phil Henry Show Best of the Year 2000 CD now up to $46,091.50. That's how much we've made for My Friend's Place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. And the number to dial to order up the number one rated Phil Henry Show Best of the Year 2000 CD is 877-616-7445. The CD's $20. It's $3.50 for shipping and handling. You can pay by way of Visa, MasterCard, a check, and I guess you'll get it very shortly. I saw something on one of the websites. There's an unofficial website for our show called Chuck and Jive. It's actually very well done. It is an unofficial site, I have to say that, so that our very good friend Bill Kiesling, who administers that site, is not going to be the party of any nasty, vicious litigation as the result of anything that we may do on this show, or he may, then we won't be a party to any crap that he flings on his site. But in any event, I thought I saw something on there that said there'd been a holdup in the delivery of the CDs. However, the good news was that what I actually saw on the site was, well, there was a holdup, but everything is flowing freely and beautifully now. So you should be able to get yours within plenty of time for Christmas. And also, if you'd like to have one autographed on the 22nd of December, I'm going to be at GameWorks at the Block at Orange, and that's for our Christmas CD signing from 9 to midnight. I'd like to make that from 9 to 11. Could I just make an official? I don't really want to be there for 3 hours. Not that I don't want to meet you nice guys. I don't want to be sitting anywhere for 3 hours. Signing CDs. So if we could make it 9 to 11, Andre, I'd really appreciate that. This is your chance to eat, drink, party, and play. Get your Best of 2000 CD. And while you're waiting in line to see me, GameWorks is offering a 3-hour game card good for unlimited use while we're there for only $20. $5 of that card purchase will go to My Friend's Place. And just in case you don't know this, you know this, so I don't really need to tell you, but a lot of people doing talk shows, radio talk shows, television talk shows, are beating something into the ground now that they really need to back off of this Gore Bush thing, because it was over last Friday. Now, I know that there's still plenty to do, but if you think I'm going to spend 5 more seconds talking about this, Gore and Bush, because it's now into the trial of the Seminole County absentee ballot exchange. Well, that's some compelling stuff, and it may be important, but the fact is we're just simply not going to talk about it. Bush wins, Gore loses, I'm mad, and I'm moving on. I'm going to move on to things like serial murders in California. Far more interesting, far more compelling. There's a guy loose out in, I'm not going to read about it, but there's a new serial murderer. They just, they think they caught the suspect. He killed 4 women, and which is not, you know, in and of itself, it's not very funny, and it certainly isn't a wonderful thing. It's very tragic. But this guy says that he killed during rough sex, and it was an accident. And they found, like, one of the heads 3 blocks away. So what kind of rough sex are we dealing with here? It was just, I'm sorry, it was an accident. It was rough sex. They found, like, a leg 2 blocks down, a head across the street. This guy, I got a picture of this guy in the paper today, the L.A. Times, who is the suspect, allegedly, Wayne Adam Ford. Get a load of that kisser. And the guy walked into a sheriff's station with like a head in his pocket or something. Yeah, he walked into a sheriff's station up in Humboldt County, and he had a head. And his brother brought him in. Because I guess he contacted his brother and said, I've done some bad things, Jim. Well, come on with me. We'll go tell the sheriff. Remember, if you tell the truth, everything will be okay. Are you sure? Yes. You tell the truth, everything's going to be fine. Okay. He walks and pulls a head out of his pocket. How can everything be okay? It ain't going to be okay, man. Your brother lied to you. You're going to go to jail, and you may get the gas chamber. What do you mean when they tell you when you're a kid, if you just be honest about things, everything's going to be fine? This guy was honest. He walked into the Humboldt County Sheriff's Station, pulled a head out of his pocket. I have to tell you, I killed someone, and I want to be honest about it, okay? I want to just be honest about it. Yeah, what do you want to be? I killed, see this head. I guess you did it. Yes, I did. What did he have? He had a breast in his pocket and an eye on his watch chain, and he just wanted to be honest about it? Because he remembered his teachings as a young child. Honesty is the best policy. You go on in there now, Wayne.
You think I'll do?
Yeah, that's right.
I always want to do the right thing.
Yeah, that's right. You do the right thing. You go in there with the head and the breast and the eyeball, and you just go in and you tell the sheriff.
I don't.
That's fine. Just go ahead and do it, pal. And the sheriff puts him in jail. Guy's freaking playing marbles with eyeballs. See, he learned in Sunday school that he needed to be honest. Anyway, this is this guy's story. And he said, well, it was just rough sex. And the head and one of the arms is, like, still missing. There's a leg they can't find. There's a foot that's in his truck an elbow that's 3 miles away. And they picked up one of the legs in another state. What the hell kind of rough sex is that? Jesus. Okay, so I got a questionnaire here that I wanted to mention to you. These are your sideline questions from a magazine that is interviewing me, or had interviewed me, and they wanted me to answer some sideline questions that would appear accompanying the article. And I've never really been a big fan of these questions, and I think you know the ones I'm talking about. They appear in little boxes, maybe at the end of a piece, or maybe at the end of a magazine, and they're always the little one-line question, and you're supposed to come up with the quick answer. You know, a question that goes something like, sometimes it's on the last page. The last page of Vanity Fair, in fact, has these questions. You know, we interviewed Bertrand Russell. We interviewed Jay Leno. And here it is. What is your pet peeve? Angry people. What do you do on a Saturday morning? I sleep in. And Rolling Stone does it. It's called Q&A. Well, what it does, and what I've always felt, is it only encourages one of two things. It encourages people to be funny. They try to be cute with their answer. You know, in other words, they'll ask a question. I don't know. I mean, what is the last book you read? You know, haven't read one in 20 years. Never read a book. Or what's the last book you read? Hansel and Gretel. Ha ha. You know, it's never, because they think that will encourage honesty by these quick one-shot questions. You'll get a snapshot of the person's personality, and you never do, because what people are doing with those interview subjects, what they do with those questions, is they try to either be cute or they try to obfuscate, and they try to make themselves something that they're not. They try to make themselves bigger, greater, grander, more moral, deeper, more courageous, but you're certainly not getting a picture of the real person. You're getting a picture of the guy trying to be cute or the guy trying to make himself bigger than what he is. And I saw these questions and I said this to Maria. I said, I don't want to answer these. I don't like these. She says, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, what I'll do, I think, is I'm going to ask the kids all these questions. I'm going to ask Catherine, all the kids, Nick, Chris, Alex, and I'm going to ask you. And I'm going to take all of your answers, and then I'm going to put all five of your names into a hat. And as I come to each question, I will pull a name out of the hat. And whosever name I pull out of the hat, I will use their answer to that question. Okay? So here's how it went. The first question was, what leisure activities do you enjoy? So I pulled the name out of the hat, and it was Maria's name. The answer she gave was exercise and cooking. So that's what I put down. The next question is, what books do you recommend for our readers? I pulled out a name. I got Catherine's name, our 9-year-old. And Catherine's recommended reading is Half Magic and Harry Potter. And I don't know it. Do you know Half Magic, Melissa? You know this book? So I wrote down Half Magic and Harry Potter. Next book. And the next question is, what book is on your nightstand right now? So I pulled out another name. It was Catherine's name again, and she had written down Half Magic and Alice in Wonderland. So I wrote that down. That's my answer. Who is your mentor or role model? I pulled out Catherine's name again. That was like 3 in a row. She said, Mommy. So I put down, my mother was my mentor and my role model. Now, you have to believe, a man saying, no guy consciously, unless you're really an exceptional man and or you came from an exceptional home or your mother was very, very influential in your life, but I'm sorry, that doesn't really happen that much. No man ever puts down as the answer to a question, who's your role model, my mother. Because he doesn't want to be perceived as a fruit or a mama's boy. So I thought, that's a really cool answer. I put that, my mother. If you had 30 minutes to sit and talk with one person, whom would you choose? I pulled another name out of the hat, and it was Nick's. And Nick's answer to that question, incredibly, was it had to do with my high school quarterback. So I wrote down, my quarterback in high school. Whose phone calls do you always return? I pulled up Nick's name. He said everybody's. If you were granted one wish, what would it be? And I pulled up, I think, Christopher's, and that was to have superpowers. So I wrote down, to have superpowers. If you could go back in time, where would you go? And I pulled Catherine's name out. It was to the 1930s or 1940s or whatever it was that grandma milked cows. And that's what I put down. So that's how I answered that. And when all the questions came out and I looked at them, I said, this is really cool because, first of all, it's very honest, but it's the honesty of five people, not one. Secondly, the way they all blend together, it's really kind of bent and twisted. It's not anybody trying to be funny. It's somebody who's weird. You know, like the most embarrassing thing. Well, here was a question. What is your pet peeve in radio? Well, I pulled up Alex's name on that one, and Alex had written down, I can't get certain signals. So I put that down because, so here is a guy, I'm answering a question, my mother's a big influence on me, I can't get certain signals, I have Alice in Wonderland on my nightstand, but Maria's answer to what has been your most unattainable goal was to balance career, parenthood, and marriage. And so I wrote that down. So here's all these really kind of juvenile answers, but this very adult answer. And oh yeah, the leisure activities I enjoy are cooking and exercise. And you put them all together, and you've got a picture not of me, but of my family. But people are going to think it's Phil Hendry, and they're going to think that I'm kind of an interesting guy, but they wouldn't want to spend too much time with me. You know, to have superpowers being one of the pivotal questions there. Okay, anyway, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. If we get a good call, we'll put it on the air. So this sideline questionnaire I did for this magazine that gracious enough to interview me for the magazine, and I believe me, I don't say this to self-aggrandize, and if I were self-aggrandizing here, I would tell you the name of the magazine. I'd tell you when it's going to be released, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't want to do that. I wanted to bring to your attention these little sideline questions, which I've seen in other magazines, and they irritate me. Because they're not anything other than an excuse for someone, especially people that they interview who aren't particularly interesting or funny, to try to be funny and fail, and then you have another stilted, silly little last page in Vanity Fair or Q&A in Rolling Stone. Does Q&A do a... Mike, does Rolling Stone do a Q&A that is a one-question thing? All right, so I told you that what I did was I took these questions home and I didn't answer them myself. I had everybody in the family answer them all, and then I would draw names out of a hat to decide which person's answer I would use for what question. And I think the last one I was on is, you know, if you could go back in time, where would you go? And I pulled Catherine's answer out, and it was the 1930s and the 1940s, or I think, you know, when my grandma used to milk cows. And then, who do you listen to on the radio? Every single kid said Rick Dees. So I wrote it down. I wrote down Rick Dees. Who did I listen to? Only the question is, who did you listen to on the radio when you were growing up? So I wrote down Rick's name. And then it says, what is your pet peeve with radio? And I can't get certain signals. Then there was a question here. It says, what's the most embarrassing thing that ever happened in your career? So I put the question to the kids and to my wife, what's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you? Well, one of the kids wrote down when they were very, 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 very young, when they were, you know, really small babies, they wrote down, I showed my butt to mommy to make sure I had wiped, and some lady was standing there and saw me. And guess which answer I pulled out of the hat? I showed my butt to mommy and to see if I'd wiped, and there was a lady standing there. And I didn't have the guts to use that one because I knew if I put that one in there, then they're going, oh, wait a second. Now he's trying to do shtick. I showed my butt to my mommy to make sure that I'd wipe. So I didn't use that. What I did write down, and I'll tell you what I actually wrote down to what I would have written down to these questions had I been in a proper frame of mind would have been completely different. There's one here. What has been your most unattainable goal, which I mentioned? And then of what achievement are you most proud? And I pulled one of the kids' questions out, and was, I made varsity on the football team. So I wrote that down. I made the varsity of my football team. And then I gave these answers over to the people in our public relations area, And actually, I emailed them back last night. And then I walked by the person's office today and I said, did you get those answers? And they look at me like, yeah, yeah, sure did. Uh-huh. Yeah. And they just went back, you know, in other words, one of those things where, okay, you know, I don't really want to talk to you. I know I have to because I work with you, but you scare me. Yeah, we got them. How do you feel about overnights? Any questions on that, Phil? So, because I can't answer these questions, what leisure activities do you enjoy? I know the leisure activity. I know what I do. I sleep and I eat. Now, if I did leisure activities, I would enjoy sky surfing. That's the ultimate thing that I have seen that I would love to do as a leisure activity. And I think I would enjoy that above all else, sky surfing, jumping out of an airplane with a freaking board strapped to my feet. But will I ever have the guts to do that? Will I ever do it? I don't know. What books do you recommend for our readers? I have none that I would recommend. Well, the one that I read, the David Frum book about the 70s. It was called How We Got Here, the 70s, the decade that gave us modern life. What book is on your nightstand now? A biography of Mary McCarthy. Anybody interested in that? Of course. Do you even know who Mary McCarthy is? Oh, I read a book about Elijah Muhammad. Yeah, okay, I would recommend a book about Elijah Muhammad. I read one called The Messenger. It was the life story of Elijah Muhammad. And look at this, Mike going, what about the Capano thing? Yeah, and the one, Never Let Her Go, the Ann Rule book about Thomas Capano murdering his secretary. Who is your mentor or role model? I honestly don't have one. That's an honest answer to that question. I don't have a role model. I don't know that it's necessary to have a role model. I just want you guys to know this. If you don't have a role model, if you're listening to me right now, if you're younger and you don't have a role model, you don't need a role model. A role model. Did I say role model? You don't need a role model. I know that. You don't even need a role model. I didn't have one, and I think I'm doing all right. Who would be my role model? It wasn't my father. You know, I mean, I'm trying to do everything that he didn't. You know, everything that I'm doing now, I want to make sure I do the things that he didn't do. That's how much of a role model my old man was. Jackie Gleason is close, but he had a major freaking heart attack. Okay, and he was real fat. So there's a lot of stuff he did I wouldn't want to do. People say Ernie Kovacs. No. I don't remember watching Ernie Kovacs. Lenny Bruce is a role model, but Lenny Bruce was a smack freak. So there's stuff that these people do that I wouldn't incorporate into my life. So does that make them role models? Lenny Bruce for his artistry, Jackie Gleason for his artistry, Ernie Kovacs doesn't relate, doesn't compute. I wasn't allowed to stay up that late. Whose phone calls do you always return? My wife's. That's the only person whose phone calls I never fail to return. If you were granted one wish, what would it be? Now, Chris's was superpowers. One of the other kids said to see into the future. Well, if I were granted one wish, what would it be? It would probably be, you know, that I have two wishes. Something lame like that. If I could go back in time, where would I go? Why would I want to go back in time when they didn't have a cure yet for polio, syphilis? Yellow fleaver ran amok, scarlet fleaver, all them fleavers. Why would I want to go back in time when I could be really living large, say, I don't know, during the 20s, right? When everything is just, everybody's going nuts. There's bathtub gin, there's all kinds of flappers, all kinds of wild sex. The country is really, you know, probably lawlessness has never reigned more than it did in the 20s. Why would I want to go back then? Because there's also all those sexually transmitted diseases that they had no penicillin for. So what else am I going to do? The days of King Arthur? Oh, sure. Yeah, I want to do that. I want Black Plague real soon. Wouldn't you like to go back to the days of Camelot when Guinevere and Lancelot and all that bullcrap? Other than the fact that they don't have any toilets, sure. Sure, they're wiping with leaves. Yeah, I want to go back then. Yeah, let me go back to when they were carrying the water up from the street in buckets. I'd like to do that soon. Okay, more on this questionnaire. It's the Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Show, 1-800-449-8686. So this sideline questionnaire I have there from this magazine that wanted me to answer these questions. One of the questions I mentioned, if you could go back in time, where would you go? And we mentioned that you know, there's nowhere to go, man. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. Don't be laying that out. You know, where, if you could go back in time, all things being equal, well, then things ain't equal, man, and I ain't going back in time. I look forward, not backward. You know what I'm saying, Mike? What were we talking about today where I say, this show looks forward, we don't look backward? What was that thing we were talking about? You don't remember? You were too bored at lunch with my conversation? Okay, thanks. What was that I was saying? We look forward, we don't look backward. Well, we were talking about something very important. Oh, yeah, one of the radio stations that we were dealing with, giving us a hard time about something. I said, look, you know, I don't know what to tell you. We are looking to tomorrow's show, not yesterday. So I ain't going to be going back in time. Now, Taylor, he said, let's go back to the 50s. He wants to go back to the 1950s. I said, okay, cool. One thing, though, what? You got to be black. And he goes, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, yeah. Oh, so all of a sudden that ain't too cool, huh? Want to go back into 50s? Think you're going to be wearing that processed pompadour, huh? Doing that, you know, stepping on the blue suede shoe thing or whatever? Only one problem. You're black. And it's Tupelo freaking Mississippi. How about that? These people, man, I love them, and I've loved them for years. These people that want to talk to me about how wonderful it was in the days of yore. Have we finally gotten over that disease? That was one that was going around in the 80s and early 90s. And Buchanan, not to get back on the campaign, but he was one of these guys that loved to talk about how things were great and how we went wrong and things were better. And I'll get the hell out. Come on. Anybody who's been out of kindergarten, anybody who's gotten out of the third grade knows that that is such absolute delusional thinking. That at one time things were better. Do you believe that? How many of you guys out there believe that at one time things were better? I want to see, and I say this with all due respect, because I love and respect all of you, even though I haven't met 99% of you. I want to see a show of hands, because the guy, any of you raise your hands on this question, man, we know you guys go on the little tiny bus. Not the short bus, but the little itsy bitsy bus. The one that just has on the side, tarred. How many of you guys think that there was a time in this country when things were better than they are right now? Go ahead. That's all of you. Everybody raised their freaking hands. There you go, the Phil Hendry audience, and I'm glad that you're there. You know, somebody said something the other day, and this is really true, that this show does nothing but give. My show does nothing but give. We ask nothing of you. We ask nothing of you. You don't have to call. You don't have to call. You don't have to do anything. We do appreciate you listening. I would appreciate it if you'd listen. You don't have to do anything else. So actually, there's two things I'd ask you to do. Listen and buy every single product of every single advertiser that you hear this afternoon. Buy 10 of every single product you hear advertised. Other than that, I don't care. We're givers. That's our crime. We give too much. On this show. That's the crime we've committed on the Phil Hendry Show. We just come in here every day and we give and we give and we give and we give. We give until we sweat. We give until we bleed. We give until we're at each other's throats around here. We give until we're in tears. There have been days when we have prepped this show that we're in I'm in tears. Melissa is yelling at me and I'm crying. There are days that Schaefer wants to garrot me with, chicken wire. There are days when Taylor wants to put a salad fork directly through my thorax, one that he copped from Sicily across the street because he's too cheap to go out and buy his own silverware. All we do is give. So anyway, how many of you guys want to go back in time? You all these guys, you want to go back in time? There was never a time better than it is today. Never a time better than it is today. This is the greatest that it's going to get, and it's only going to get better. Don't be giving me the 50s, and don't lay some jive on me about Leave It to Beaver in the 60s. Don't even talk to me about the 70s, and get out of here with the 80s. Don't be laying Reagan on me or anything. I remember when everybody was running around wringing their hands like a chicken with their head cut off, talking about, the country's going bank. We've been going bankrupt for years. It's like talking to that teacher that I talked to, who I will not mention the name of, nor the school that she teaches at, telling me that, oh my God, the Catholic Archdiocese, we don't get enough money, and the teachers are bouncing from one crisis to the next, but we love to teach in a private school, because it's better than a public system, but we really don't get paid what we're worth, and yada, yada, yada. She's telling me this today. It's the same stuff I heard when I was in school 30 freaking years ago. The same thing. So the 50s blow, Taylor. I'm just, you know, I was there in the 50s. I was four. I was on a scooter, and I saw my old man with his funky-looking chino pants and his fluted beer glasses and the whole, when it's time to relax, beer after beer, if you've got the time, we've got the beer, you queer. And from the land of sky blue waters, I remember looking at the, you know, Friday night fights. Pabst Blue Ribbon brings you the Friday night fights. Tonight, Archie Moore versus Jake LaMotta or whoever the hell it was. The avocado-colored carpeting, my mother's, those plastic seats, and those crazy-ass... Now, the whole thing about the 50s, and they got this thing down at Disney's that our view of the future from the 50s, they got a thing at Disney, Tomorrowland, they're doing that now. So, in other words, the new hip thing is to decorate your house, which is what you want to do, right, Taylor? Because I got a bunch of crap in my garage. He wants to decorate his house as if it's a futuristic view from the point of view of the 50s. So, in other words, those, like, weird-ass-looking tables... You know those tables that look like boomerangs? You know, and the Google, you know, the coffee shops with the weird turquoise freaking plastic seats. And you and what was that thing you were saying, man? Was that at the Tomorrowland thing? So in the 50s, this is how, huh? The house of the future. In the 50s, this is how we thought we'd be living. In an egg. In an egg. And it was what, 1970? It was an elevated egg, okay? This is how we'll be living in 1975. It's a freaking egg with a ladder going up to it. Yeah, that's great with the groceries. Good idea. Yeah. I'm going to get out. First of all, I'm going to park my car under the egg, get out with bags of groceries, and climb up the ladder to the front door. Or wait a second. Was there some sort of a particle beam that was going to take me inside? And how about that people mover, man? That's a real, that's a home run. That thing went about a half a mile per hour. You're just... People moving on. You know, the only place where those moving treadmill things really work is at the airport, okay? I like getting on those babies and walking on. Other than that, I don't want one of those in my house. Who wants that in your house? On the other cool ones, the entrance to Caesar's Palace. You're right, Mike. That is awesome, okay? And you'll notice Caesar's Palace is beautiful because they treat you like the slob that you are. See, I like Caesar's because they treat you like the bum you are. You come flying in on a carpet, and when you walk out of that joint, you're out in an alley. You leaving? Yeah, go. Yeah, they dump you into an alley next to a dumpster. You got no freaking money. You got to walk all the way up that driveway thing to get out onto the street. The only cool thing that they got at Disneyland, and the only cool thing really that, not the only cool thing, but the only cool thing that they came up with back then, which we should have had today, was that monorail, because that monorail is beautiful. That monorail is like an elevated track. How many times are we going to talk about this? You can only talk about it so much before you're convinced somebody is trying to mess up our party. That monorail was great. It was a single track. It was electric. It was elevated. Didn't have to dig underground. It would have taken up like half the time to build it at half the price. You know, the electricity alone was whatever. And it was. They looked cool, too. They had those bullet-looking things. They were awesome. No, so did they build. And for years, when I was a kid, they were talking about that was going to be the mass transit for L.A. They were talking about that for years. Oh, yeah, it won't be long now. We're going to put that monorail. And you could put it right down the middle of the freeway. You know, you've already got the access. You already have the egress or whatever the hell they call it, so you can stick it right there. No, they never got around to that. What they wound up doing, though, is digging the streets up, digging holes everywhere, going over budget by billions of dollars, having things blow up and collapse. And now we got a train where my producer, Mike Schaefer, is still saying, yeah, one of these days I'm going to get on it. I just, you know, I haven't gotten around to it yet. I still got a car. Are you going to ride that thing down from Hollywood, or are you not? An egg. And then the other thing is the three-wheeled car. Yes, sir, that's the one for me. Thank you for making that. The three-wheeled car. Remember the three-wheeled car? You know, the really good stuff, nobody's done anything about. But by God, they got a three-wheeled car and they got an egg-shaped house. But the gas, you know, the freaking electric car and the steam-powered bullcrap and the monorail and all the really cool stuff, nobody's done anything. But we got that egg-shaped house when you need it. You know, are you sure you don't? No, I'm fine with the egg-shaped house. We got a million of them. Yeah, that's great. I'm really happy that you guys went out on a limb, man, on that one, huh? I'm telling you, you can move in tomorrow. No, that's perfectly fine. We're opening a new phase of the egg-shaped houses. And they all look the same. Great. I'll pass, man. Big bay window in the egg-shaped house. Plus, we've got that moving treadmill deal, and like on the Jetsons. Oh, okay, great. So, in other words, to take me from my bed to the bathroom, I'll just turn that on. I weigh 250 pounds. Why don't I shoot for 300? Why don't I just get on that treadmill and go everywhere on that thing, man? That way I can just a pound a day, and within a year, I'm Santa freaking Claus. I'll get on the treadmill. I'll go from the bedroom to the bathroom. Sure. The Jetsons, if you look at the Jetsons, you know, the only time I would want one of those treadmills in my house is when I'm drunk and I have to puke. And then you put it on fast, like, zzz, takes you over there. But then it might overshoot the toilet and send you through a window. The Jetsons is the show. They got a robot maid. Remember they had those robots, those remote control robots? By the time you put the batteries in and you get the thing coordinated to do what you want to do, you could have vacuumed the floor yourself. It just... Rosie the maid, and they had, and they lived up in the air. Remember that? They had, their house was way up in the sky. So in other words, the population is so out of control that we have to start living up in the sky. That means there must be some crime. The Jetsons were like living in heaven, man. It didn't look like there was any population problem on Earth. There wasn't no Soylent Green, but they're up there. They were on a house on stilts 3 miles high. And he had the only thing that they had that, of course, they'll never have because it's the coolest thing that they've predicted that we'll have and that we'll never get are the flying cars. When are we going to get to have those? Because those things are so cool, it defies the imagination. I mean, anybody who's ever seen a Jetsons, anybody who's ever been to Disneyland's Tomorrowland, anybody that's ever read any book about future life in America, anybody that ever saw, Metropolis, Fritz Lang's movie, anybody, they want to have a flying car. I want my flying car. You predicted it 50 years ago. Where's my flying car? I'll take AIDS. I'll take war. I'll take Palestinians and Jews at each other's throats. I'll even take not having a president for the next 4 years if you guys can come up with the thing that you promised, the flying car. The car that compacted into a briefcase. So I get out of it, and it goes whoop, right into a briefcase, and I carry it in. That car. Make it. Now. And then you can elect Hitler as the president of America, but we got to have that car. Okay, 1-800-449-86. It's the people's flying car. Look, if Hitler could come up with a Volkswagen, you know, I got the whole thing for Bush. It'll immortalize him in the next 4 years. Hitler had the Volkswagen, Bush. You can have the flying car. Okay, 1-800, that'll keep him busy. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Oh, great. Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. So I'm talking here with the guys that are telling me that we need a war because nothing cool gets invented unless we have a war. I'm going, I don't think the computer had anything to do with a war. And then they go, oh, yes, it did. There were computers on submarines in World War II. Anyway, when it comes to the future, we're talking about the future. I can't predict the future. The human race is notoriously... famously bad at predicting its own future. We've never gotten anything right. And I mean we've never gotten anything right. We, if you were to believe the people predicting the future around here, and I'm one of everybody, I mean, we don't know. Jesus would have visited about six times by now. we would have had Jesus, we would have had Armageddon, we would have had the whole shooting match about 15 times by now if we were to believe everybody was predicting that one. By the year 2070, we should be on donkeys because the world has been blown up 58 times in a nuclear war by now. Like, what was it, H.G. Wells' Things to Come? By 1970, the whole thing was a rubble heap. We can't predict the future. You know, we don't know how to do that. So, you know, what's the, why, you know, if you're going to do it, just do it for kicks. Do it for laughs. Do it the Jetson way. Just, you know, come up with goofy machines and inventions and wee fun stuff, you know, fly. But that flying car thing, you better come through with that. Of course it's not going to happen. A flying car? Oh, yeah. Sure. See, in other words, the guys that predicted that in the past, they said, well, in the future we'll have flying cars. Well, why is that? Because of the congestion, it makes much more sense to have that kind of vehicular traffic in the air. It's more wide open. We can use the land for more sensible things like living and eating and breathing and loving and living our lives. You know, this is a little problem, okay? People don't know how to drive, man. Whether they're in the air, whether they're on the ground, they don't know how to drive. Are you putting me on? You know, you talk about an accident waiting to happen. You got a guy in a flying freaking car pulling some of the stunts these cats are pulling out here on a 101 tonight, and you've got, like, debris just raining down, flaming hot metal raining on houses like 5-6 times a day. You know, you just see a transmission hit the driveway. Dad's home. Okay. Transmission and a briefcase, and then your dad. Flying car. Yeah, when we learn to drive. And only then, because nobody, who's going to approve that? By the way, you serious about skydiving? Because Taylor's telling me he wants to go skydiving, and I said, I can do that. I hate heights. I have a fear of heights. I'm deathly afraid of heights. I'm afraid I'm going to die if I go higher than a ladder. But sure, I'll go skydiving. Do you want to go skydiving? He says, yeah, all you got to do is pull the cord at 1,000 feet. Well, what if I forget? Well, you'd have to be pretty stupid. I guess so, and then I guess I die. I, you know, it's just stuff that bothers me. How high up are we? Oh, about 8,000 feet. That's over a mile. I don't know what it is, but I have that fear, and I've talked to you guys about it before, but I want to overcome it. Now, I know that G. Gordon Liddy wrote the book. I think it was called Will. Are you guys familiar with G. Gordon Liddy? He's one of the guys that apparently tapped into the White House. He was one of Nixon's boys. He was one of the guys that was in the last big constitutional crisis before this one. And G. Gordon Liddy said that he had a fear of, he put his hand over the cattle, but he also had a fear of rats. So he claims that as a child, he caught a rat, killed it, cooked it, and ate it to overcome his fear of rats. And that is usually used as an example of, a guy who's completely out of his mind or a guy who knows a way to overcome his fear. Confront your fear. So my fear of heights, one would naturally follow. They would say, well, Phil, why don't you get up in the airplane, put on that bag, and jump out of that sucker, man. And I say, well, that's fine. My mind is saying, yes, I'll do that. But what if I have a heart attack? What if I physically can't take it? Now, Mike Schaefer brings up a very good point. G. Gordon Liddy hates rats, and yet to overcome his fear of rats, he killed one and cooked one. Mike hates all Frenchmen. But he ain't going to kill and cook one. He might eat one, but he ain't killing it and he ain't cooking it. 1-800-449-8686. Don't forget to order our CD, 877-616-7445. 877-616-7445. $46,091 we've made with the sale of the Best of the Phil Henry 2000 CD. And we thank you on behalf of My Friend's Place.